Chapter 25. How Mr. Ralph Nickleby provided for his niece and sister-in-law. On the second morning after the departure of Nicholas for Yorkshire, Kate Nickleby sat in a very faded chair raised upon a very moldy throne in Miss La Creevy's room, giving that lady a sitting for the portrait upon which she was engaged, and towards the full perfection of which, Miss La Creevy had had the street door case brought upstairs, in order that she might be the better able to infuse into the counterfeit countenance of Miss Nickleby a bright salmon flesh tint which she had originally hit upon while executing the miniature of a young officer there contained, and which bright salmon flesh tint was considered, by Miss La Creevy's chief friends and patrons, to be quite a novelty in art. As indeed it was. "I think I have caught it now," said Miss La Creevy. "The very shade. This will be the sweetest portrait I have ever done, certainly. It will be your genius that makes it so, then, I am sure," replied Kate, smiling. "No, no, I won't allow that, my dear," rejoined Miss La Creevy. "It's a very nice subject, a very nice subject, indeed, though, of course, something depends upon the mode of treatment." "And not a little," observed Kate. "Why, my dear, you are right there," said Miss La Creevy. "In the main you are right there, though I don't allow that it is of such very great importance in the present case. Ah, the difficulties of art, my dear, are great. They must be, I have no doubt," said Kate, humoring her good-natured little friend. "They are beyond anything you can form the faintest conception of," replied Miss La Creevy. "What with bringing out eyes with all one's power, and keeping down noses with all one's force, and adding two heads, and taking away teeth altogether, you have no idea of the trouble one little miniature is. The remuneration can scarcely repay you," said Kate. "Why, it does not, and that's the truth," answered Miss La Creevy. "And then people are so dissatisfied and unreasonable, that, 9 times out of 10, there's no pleasure in painting them. Sometimes they say, 'Oh, how very serious you have made me look, Miss La Creevy.' And at others, 'La, Miss La Creevy, how very smirking.' When the very essence of a good portrait is, that it must be either serious or smirking, or it's no portrait at all." "Indeed. Said Kate, laughing. "Certainly, my dear, because the sitters are always either the one or the other," replied Miss La Creevy. "Look at the Royal Academy. All those beautiful shiny portraits of gentlemen in black velvet waistcoats, with their fists doubled up on round tables, or marble slabs, are serious, you know, and all the ladies who are playing with little parasols, or little dogs, or little children, it's the same rule in art, only varying the objects, are smirking. In fact," said Miss La Creevy, sinking her voice to a confidential whisper, "there are only two styles of portrait painting, the serious and the smirk, and we always use the serious for professional people except actors sometimes, and the smirk for private ladies and gentlemen who don't care so much about looking clever." Kate seemed highly amused by this information, and Miss La Creevy went on painting and talking, with immovable complacency. "What a number of officers you seem to paint!" said Kate, availing herself of a pause in the discourse, and glancing round the room. "Number of what, child?" inquired Miss La Creevy, looking up from her work. "Character portraits, oh yes, they are not real military men, you know." "No. Bless your heart, of course not. Only clerks and that, who hire a uniform coat to be painted in, and send it here in a carpet bag. Some artists," said Miss La Creevy, "keep a red coat, and charge 7 and 6 pence extra for hire and carmine. But I don't do that myself, for I don't consider it legitimate." Drawing herself up, as though she plumed herself greatly upon not resorting to these lures to catch sitters, Miss La Creevy applied herself, more intently, to her task, only raising her head occasionally to look with unspeakable satisfaction at some touch she had just put in, and now and then giving Miss Nickleby to understand what particular feature she was at work upon at the moment. Not, apostrophe, she expressly observed, that you should make it up for painting, my dear, but because it's our custom sometimes to tell sitters what part we are upon, in order that, if there's any particular expression they want introduced, they may throw it in, at the time, you know. Apostrophe, and when, apostrophe, said Miss La Creevy, after a long silence, to wit, an interval of full a minute and a half, when do you expect to see your uncle again? Apostrophe, apostrophe, I scarcely know. I had expected to have seen him before now, apostrophe, replied Kate. Soon, I hope, for this state of uncertainty is worse than anything. Apostrophe, I suppose he has money, hasn't he? Apostrophe, apostrophe, inquired Miss La Creevy. He is very rich, I have heard, apostrophe, rejoined Kate. I don't know that he is, but I believe so. Apostrophe, ah, you may depend upon that he is, or he wouldn't be so surly, apostrophe, remarked Miss La Creevy, who was an odd little mixture of shrewdness and simplicity. When a man's a bear, he is generally pretty independent. Apostrophe, his manner is rough, apostrophe, said Kate. Rough. Apostrophe, apostrophe, cried Miss La Creevy, a porcupine's a featherbed to him. I never met with such a cross-grained old savage. Apostrophe, it is only his manner, I believe, apostrophe, observed Kate, timidly. He was disappointed in early life, I think I have heard, or has had his temper soured by some calamity. I should be sorry to think ill of him until I knew he deserved it. Apostrophe, well, that's very right and proper, apostrophe, observed the miniature painter, and heaven forbid that I should be the cause of your doing so. But now, mightn't he, without feeling it himself, make you and your mama some nice little allowance that would keep you both comfortable until you were well married, and be a little fortune to her afterwards? What would $100 a year, for instance, be to him? Apostrophe, apostrophe, I don't know what it would be to him, apostrophe, said Kate, with energy, but it would be that to me, I would rather die than take. Apostrophe, heyday. Apostrophe, apostrophe, cried Miss La Creevy. A dependence upon him, apostrophe, said Kate, would embitter my whole life. I should feel begging a far less degradation. Apostrophe, well. Apostrophe, apostrophe, exclaimed Miss La Creevy. This of a relation whom you will not hear an indifferent person speak ill of, my dear, sounds oddly enough, I confess. Apostrophe, I dare say it does, apostrophe, replied Kate, speaking more gently, indeed I am sure it must. I only mean that with the feelings and recollection of better times upon me, I could not bear to live on anybody's bounty, not as particularly, but anybody's. Apostrophe, Miss La Creevy looked slyly at her companion, as if she doubted whether Ralph himself were not the subject of dislike, but seeing that her young friend was distressed, made no remark. I only ask of him, apostrophe, continued Kate, whose tears fell while she spoke, that he will move so little out of his way, in my behalf, as to enable me by his recommendation, only by his recommendation, to earn, literally, my bread and remain with my mother. Whether we shall ever taste happiness again, depends upon the fortunes of my dear brother, but if he will do this, and Nicholas only tells us that he is well and cheerful, I shall be contented. Apostrophe, as she ceased to speak, there was a rustling behind the screen which stood between her and the door, and some person knocked at the wainscot. Apostrophe, come in, whoever it is. Apostrophe, apostrophe, cried Miss La Creevy. The person complied, and, coming forward at once, gave to view the form and features of no less an individual than Mr. Ralph Nickleby himself. Your servant, ladies, apostrophe, said Ralph, looking sharply at them by turns. You were talking so loud that I was unable to make you hear. apostrophe, when the man of business had a more than commonly vicious snarl lurking at his heart, he had a trick of almost concealing his eyes under their thick and protruding brows, for an instant, and then displaying them in their full keenness. As he did so now, and tried to keep down the smile which parted his thin compressed lips, and puckered up the bad lines about his mouth, they both felt certain that some part, if not the whole, of their recent conversation, had been overheard. I called in, on my way upstairs, more than half expecting to find you here, apostrophe said Ralph, addressing his niece, and looking contemptuously at the portrait. Is that my niece's portrait, ma'am? Apostrophe, apostrophe, yes it is, Mr. Nickleby, apostrophe said Miss La Creevy, with a very sprightly air, and between you and me and the post, sir, it will be a very nice portrait too, though I say it to him the painter. Apostrophe, don't trouble yourself to show it to me, ma'am, apostrophe cried Ralph, moving away, I have no eye for likenesses. Is it nearly finished? Apostrophe, why, yes, apostrophe replied Miss La Creevy, considering with the pencil end of her brush in her mouth. Two sittings more will apostrophe have them at once, ma'am, apostrophe said Ralph. She'll have no time to idle over fooleries after tomorrow. Work, ma'am, work, we must all work. Have you let your lodgings, ma'am? Apostrophe, I have not put a bill up yet, sir. Apostrophe, put it up at once, ma'am. They won't want the rooms after this week, or if they do, can't pay for them. Now, my dear, if you're ready, we'll lose no more time. Apostrophe, with an assumption of kindness which sat worse upon him even than his usual manner, Mr. Ralph Nickleby motioned to the young lady to precede him, and bowing gravely to Miss La Creevy, closed the door and followed upstairs, where Mrs. Nickleby received him with many expressions of regard. Stopping them somewhat abruptly, Ralph waved his hand with an impatient gesture, and proceeded to the object of his visit. I have found a situation for your daughter, ma'am, apostrophe said Ralph. Well, apostrophe replied Mrs. Nickleby. Now, I will say, that is only just what I have expected of you. Depend upon it, I said to Kate, only yesterday morning at breakfast, that after your uncle has provided, in that most ready manner, for Nicholas, he will not leave us until he has done at least the same for you. These were my very words, as near as I remember. Kate, my dear, why don't you thank your apostrophe, let me proceed, ma'am, pray, apostrophe said Ralph, interrupting his sister-in-law in the full torrent of her discourse. Kate, my love, let your uncle proceed, apostrophe said Mrs. Nickleby. I am most anxious that he should, mama, apostrophe rejoined Kate. Well, my dear, if you are anxious that he should, you had better allow your uncle to say what he has to say, without interruption, apostrophe observed Mrs. Nickleby, with many small nods and frowns. Your uncle's time is very valuable, my dear, and however desirous you may be and naturally desirous, as I am sure any affectionate relations who have seen so little of your uncle as we have, must naturally be, to protract the pleasure of having him among us, still, we are bound not to be selfish, but to take into consideration the important nature of his occupations in the city. Apostrophe, I am very much obliged to you, ma'am, apostrophe said Ralph with a scarcely perceptible sneer. An absence of business habits in this family leads, apparently, to a great waste of words before business, when it does come under consideration is arrived at all. Apostrophe, I fear it is so indeed, apostrophe replied Mrs. Nickleby with a sigh. Your poor brother, apostrophe, my poor brother, ma'am, apostrophe interposed Ralph tartly, had no idea what business was unacquainted, I verily believe, with the very meaning of the word. Apostrophe, I fear he was, apostrophe said Mrs. Nickleby, with her handkerchief to her eyes. If it hadn't been for me, I don't know what would have become of him. Apostrophe, what strange creatures we are. The slight bait so skillfully thrown out by Ralph, on their first interview, was dangling on the hook yet. At every small deprivation or discomfort which presented itself in the course of the 24 hours, to remind her of her straitened and altered circumstances, peevish visions of her dower of £1,000 had arisen before Mrs. Nickleby's mind, until, at last, she had come to persuade herself that of all her late husband's creditors she was the worst used, and the most to be pitied. And yet, she had loved him dearly for many years, and had no greater share of selfishness than is the usual lot of mortals. Such is the irritability of sudden poverty. A decent annuity would have restored her thoughts to their old train, at once. "Repining is of no use, ma'am," apostrophe said Ralph. "Of all fruitless errands, sending 8 here to look after a day that is gone is the most fruitless." Apostrophe, so it is, apostrophe, sobbed Mrs. Nickleby. "So it is. Apostrophe, as you feel so keenly, in your own purse and person, the consequences of inattention to business, ma'am," apostrophe said Ralph, "I am sure you will impress upon your children the necessity of attaching themselves to it early in life." "Apostrophe, of course I must see that," apostrophe rejoined Mrs. Nickleby. "Sad experience, you know, brother-in-law. Kate, my dear, put that down in the next letter to Nicholas, or remind me to do it if I write." Apostrophe, Ralph paused for a few moments, and seeing that he had now made pretty sure of the mother, in case the daughter objected to his proposition, went on to say, "The situation that I have made interest to procure, ma'am, is with a milliner and dressmaker, in short." Apostrophe, a milliner. Apostrophe, apostrophe, cried Mrs. Nickleby. "A milliner and dressmaker, ma'am," apostrophe replied Ralph. "Dressmakers in London, as I need not remind you, ma'am, who are so well acquainted." Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.